It's the Healthy Woman Show on WJR with Marie Osborne and Dr. Jonathan Zaden, presented by Women's Excellence. Now here's your host, Marie Osborne.
And welcome into the Healthy Woman Show. I'm Marie Osborne alongside Dr. Jonathan Zaden. All listeners, you're going to be able to get something out of today's show with a great variety of topics that we're going to be covering. First, Dr. Zaden, it's American Heart Month.
Well, you know, this is interesting because this is something that we'll get into later. But, you know, heart disease is the number one, you know, killer of women. And we need to pay attention to that. We oftentimes, you know, we focus so much on breast cancer and so much on the other things that are more women-centric. But heart disease is number one, and we need to pay attention to it.
And another show favorite, of course, is the Ask the Doc segment. We're going to be talking about that. We're going to put you on the hot seat.
Always on the hot seat on that one, for sure.
And then we're also going to be touching on healthcare insurance. And then to wrap up the show, we're going to be talking about endometriosis and the progress of this new Endometriosis Treatment Center of America. So we're going to cover a lot of ground today on the show. Stay with us as the Healthy Woman Show continues here on WJR. Welcome back to the Healthy Woman Show here on WJR with Dr. Jonathan Zaden. I'm Marie Osborne, and we are going to kick off the show talking about Heart Health Month, and especially this being an extremely important topic for women. And Dr. Zaden, that's where you come in. I know you talk to your patients a lot about heart health and general health of women, but mostly heart health, and no better time to talk about it than this month.
Well, it's really interesting that this came up today because it actually came up in the office today. So I was talking to a patient and, you know, I told her that I had to do the show and she said, what's your show going to be on? And I said, well, you know, it's heart month. And she said, oh, women need to know about that because she had a friend that had had a heart attack. So, you know, it is the, you know, as we talked about in the open, you know, it is the number one killer of women, right? So it's not the thing that we think of. And unfortunately, when women end up in an emergency room or things like that, oftentimes they don't think that it's heart disease. And that's something that the emergency room physicians now are really trained on, to actually look at the female's heart. You know, we've actually had patients that have been in the emergency room for a lot of hours because they weren't, you know, taken in as fast because they were women. And people don't realize how important, you know, heart health is.
Dr. Zaden, I've read that women present differently with their symptoms of maybe a heart attack, that they don't, you know, men present one way, but women show things in another way. In other words, maybe they have some fatigue or an upset stomach, or they just show differently.
Well, you know, they get a lot, you know, they can get the chest pain or discomfort. But, you know, they get a lot of shortness of breath. They can get nausea, vomiting. Anybody can present the same way. It's just that, you know, men have that characteristic pain that radiates on the left-hand side. And women don't always get that. It might be a little bit more subtle. And I think that's part of why, you know, people feel that it's different. The truth of the matter is, I mean, it's really about, you know, if you get an uncomfortable pressure, if you start to notice that you're doing things and you're starting to get more short of breath when you're doing things, you know, if you get a fullness in the center of your chest at any time, you know, if you have difficulties taking in, you know, a deep breath because you just don't think you can get enough air, that's a sign that your heart might not be pumping the way that it should, or that it's losing its own blood supply. Remember, the heart has to get its own blood supply. So we think of it, the heart pumping blood everywhere else. But, you know, in some cases, you know, a heart attack is really when the heart loses its own blood supply. Right. So, you know, as that narrows, as those big vessels that feed the heart, there's five major ones. And when those, you know, start to be occluded, you start to lose blood supply to your heart. So just like if you lose blood supply to your arm or anything else, you have a harder time to, you know, exercise it. The heart has a harder time pumping. And that's what a heart attack really is. And ultimately, it can lose so much blood supply, right, that it kills off the heart muscle. And, you know, I don't think we need to talk too much in detail about that. If we don't have a heart muscle, it's a tough day.
Let's go over a little bit the risk factors having to do with having a heart attack or heart health in general, because I know these are not a shock to anybody, some of these risk factors. Can you talk about that?
You know, you can't really stop genetics, right? I mean, so if you have a bad family history of cardiac disease, I mean, it's tough to change that. But you can change so many of the things that will ultimately kind of exacerbate your own family history. Right. So, you know, most of these things are really treatable today, right? I mean, the first one being high blood pressure. First of all, going to the doctor to find out whether or not you have high blood pressure or not. I can tell you just recently we had a patient that was, you know, rescheduled for surgery. Her blood pressure was 220 over 120. And she came into the, you know, into the pre-op holding. Now, it wasn't that high in her pre-operative visit, but it certainly wasn't just from anxiety, right? We sent her to a cardiologist and it was consistently 160 to 170 over about 110. And so, you know, that needs to be identified and then treated. And we've got plenty of treatments for high blood pressure today, right? So there's no issue there. The second one being smoking, right? I think we all know that. I mean, I'm not even going to go into great detail about that. Quit smoking. That'll be the end of that risk factor. The third one would be, you know, cholesterol. None of us, nobody wants to take cholesterol medicine, but nonetheless, we all know that we need to do it. You know, if your cholesterol is high, that's one of the big family risk factors. That's the big genetic component. We've got ways of treating it. You need to kind of take the medicine and treat it because, you know, if your heart doesn't pump, that's the end of the day. So, you know, you got to do it. The lack of, you know, people talk about a lack of regular activity. I mean, just plain exercise, right? I mean, this is common sense. I mean, you know, the more you do, the more you exercise your muscle, in any muscle, it does better, and the heart is no different. And then, you know, obviously overweight or obesity, we talk about that on the show all the time. I think we talked about it on our last show. I mean, you got to control that. And then diabetes. I can't tell you how many people I see with diabetes that are just, you know, they kind of just, problem with that is that that ultimately affects all your vascular disease. So you get peripheral artery disease and heart disease, things like that. So they don't even know the damage they're doing because they may not feel bad at that level. They may not be going to the emergency room, but they're doing a lot of damage. Really keeping yourself what we call euglycemic, or keeping that blood sugar stable, is what you need to do.
Dr. Zayden, we just have a moment left in this segment. Just quickly, again, go over those symptoms of a heart attack for women that they need to know.
You know, if you've got chest pain, if you get, you know, you break out in a cold sweat, you have nausea, you're lightheaded, you're getting short of breath when you're having activity, that's stuff that you need to be evaluated right away. If it's chest pain, I recommend that you go to the hospital. I think that the most important thing, I don't want to rush this too much, but the most important thing that we've learned from COVID is that we treat heart disease and we treat it well, especially in the acute phase. So when somebody's having a heart attack, we can make a difference. And when we're not making a difference because people are afraid to go into the emergency room because they're afraid to get COVID, many of these people are actually passing away unnecessarily when they could have simple interventions to prolong their life for 1, 5, 10, or even 20 years with a simple, you know, angioplasty or stent placement. These are things we have to pay attention to. I don't want to shortchange this. If you're having cardiac disease, you need to go to the hospital. Understand it, know it, believe it, and don't worry about COVID. Because COVID, we're finding that we can deal with. It's very, very hard to deal with somebody who has a heart attack.
So women out there who are listening to the sound of our voices, heart health is extremely important. It's serious business. Cardiovascular disease is the number one killer of women, causing 1 in 3 deaths each year, approximately one woman every minute. Don't be that woman. The Healthy Show continues here on WJR with Dr. Jonathan Zayden. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Healthy Woman Show here on WJR. Alongside is Dr. Jonathan Zayden, as always. Dr. Zayden, one of our most popular segments that we've done on this show, where we've gotten calls and feedback on, has been talking about healthcare benefits and how to use them wisely. So we want to start early part of the year talking about this. Can you start by telling us about testing? I'm a patient and I know that I'll probably need some tests this year. What should I be thinking about?
Well, I'll tell you, the fact that, you know, we're talking about this early in the year is really a function of what you said, and that it's one of the most popular segments of the show. People listen to it multiple times. They click on the podcast for it. They talk about it. And the reason they do is because, you know, it is a sign of the times, and that, you know, people are more afraid of their healthcare benefits than they are afraid of their health. You know what I mean? And so, you know, we have to pay attention. And when we talk about testing early for healthcare, and when we put that in the context of healthcare benefits, it's all about using a plan on how to use your healthcare benefit, right? Most people, they kind of conserve their healthcare benefit for, you know, the first 6 months of the year. Then they need to do a few things and they erode a few things. And then they say, well, I only have, you know, $500 or $1,000 left. Then I'll start thinking about doing something. And by the time they think about doing it, it becomes October, right? And then in many cases, they end up getting their surgery the following year in the next benefit year because they can't make it because either the hospital can't do it, the surgery center can't do it. You know, in this year, it was COVID testing. A lot of people lost out on their insurance benefit because of that and spent a full, because a lot of people do that. So this show today is designed to tell you, don't do that. I mean, just start from scratch and say, you know what, I'm going to spread out my healthcare spend over the course of a year. Because if I do that, or I use my, you know, flexible savings account, and I do all those things that I can do to help that, I'm going to be able to get the things done that I need to be done, that need to be done. You know, the one that I do a lot of is urinary incontinence, right? It's not urgent, doesn't have to be done today or tomorrow, but people have a lot of problems with that. And oftentimes they put it off to the end of the year. Start your testing now. You know, it's already February, right? So it's going to be March in a week. So, you know, I mean, start your testing, get that testing all done. Then you have the flexibility to do that procedure whenever you want before the end of the year, long before it gets too busy, or schedule it out in November if you don't want to do it until the end of the year. You know, put yourself on the books, you know, not only in our office, but in every office, no matter what you need, if it's a dermatologic procedure, if it's, you know, a urologic procedure, whatever it is, you know, use that time to kind of, you know, plan and get all the tests to get your procedure done, because preoperative testing is important. You will not get your surgery unless you have all the testing done. So avoiding the cost, you're going to do it at some point.
Let's talk a little bit about staying within your network. I know sometimes that can be kind of a dicey operation when you're trying to stay within that network.
Well, the biggest thing is that, you know, there's, you know, depending on your insurance, some insurances don't have a preferred network and some do. If you have anything that's a network preferred or an HMO type of insurance, you need to make sure that you understand that network, because the network doctors are oftentimes much less expensive to go to. The network facilities may be less expensive. And if you go out of network, it may cost you more money. Now, there are times where the healthcare insurance company will decide that it's okay for you to go out of network, and they'll charge you in-network rates. And that's when they don't have an applicable service. You know, for example, we do endometriosis. So we do, you know, pretty extensive excision of endometriosis cases. So sometimes people will lobby their healthcare insurance and say, hey, I can't get this with anyone in my network. There's people that treat endometriosis, but I've already been to them. I've already been to two or three of them, and they're not the people. We want to go to a specialist. So that's what it means by staying in your network. And you have to find that out as a patient. You know, Marie, you know, it's not the doctor, you know, that does that. It the patient needs to know. The doctor can tell you that, but too many people rely on the doctor's office and the staff and everybody else to tell them. And sometimes it takes too long for them to figure that out. And they get billed for, you know, out of network rates when they needed to figure that out on their own.
What about understanding your coverage? How do we grasp that?
I think that the biggest thing that people should do, you know, when you do certain things for your home or for any activity that you do, you oftentimes ask a lot of questions about it. People get their healthcare insurance card in the mail. Sometimes they put it in their drawer or they put it in their purse. That's the last time they've looked at any of that paperwork or anything.
Guilty as charged.
Believe me, that paperwork is extremely important, right? Because it may be the difference in you spending, you know, a lot of money, you know, differently. And so, you know, my thought process is that, you know, you need to do a little homework on your healthcare coverage. Find out what's your deductible. What is the network? How much, you know, how much are you have a copay? Do you have a co-insurance? All of these types of things oftentimes will affect how much you're going to have to pay, and you'll understand it a little better. You can budget for it. Because the most important thing, most people, Marie, want to pay their bills. They don't want to be in a problem with their bills. It's just that they don't even understand the bills they're going to get in healthcare. I think it's a significant flaw, something I've talked about, I think, even on the show. I mean, where do you go? And when you go to Target, you have a pretty good idea how much all the things in your cart cost. When you go to the doctor, you have no idea what all that stuff costs. And it really is something that you should pay attention to. Not so much, you know, I hate to say that, paying attention to the cost is somewhat difficult because it's not transparent, and nobody can really make it transparent because there's no law to make it transparent. But at least understand what your maximum, you know, out of pocket could be, so you understand it a little bit more in detail. And I think that's the most important thing.
Let's talk a little bit about emergency room visits. And as we know, they can be very expensive.
Well, I mean, I think the big thing here is that when, you know, people are doing, you know, emergency room for non-emergent visits. Now, you heard me say, because it's Heart Health Month, it's important that people go to the emergency room when they identify something that you're having, i.e. chest pain, you know, or shortness of breath, or lightheaded, or you fell and hit your head and you're just not sure, and you're now starting to get an unrelenting headache. Those are the things that you need to use the emergency room. You know, people go to the emergency room because they have signs of, you know, in our field, sometimes a yeast infection, or, you know, they want to get a culture. That's not where you want to use your emergency room visit, because I'll tell you today, the insurance companies caught on to that. And the only way they have to combat them, just people just walking in the door for any symptom, is to say, you know what, we're going to charge you a lot. So avoid it if you can. But of course, I'll say this again, as I said it earlier, do not avoid going to the emergency room if you're having a severe symptom. Very, very important. COVID has taught us that on multiple different levels. People have really had difficult things happen to them, and even fatalities, purely because they were afraid to go in.
Just a quick side note. What about the urgent care center? So if you're kind of like on the line, maybe start with the urgent care center.
Well, certainly the urgent care is a little bit of a cheaper alternative. You know, and in many cases they can take care of small items, you know, like obviously if you have, you know, maybe the flu, a cough, the cold, all that type of stuff. I feel almost weird saying that in the time of COVID, because anything is suspected as COVID, but they can do this testing and they can get you in and out of there faster and make it a lot cheaper. So, you know, those things it's good for, you know, maybe if you have a simple urinary tract infection, you can't fit into the doctor's office and those things, then that's a reasonable thing to do.
What about taking advantage of preventative care services that's covered by your insurance?
Many people don't even realize this. I can't even believe how many people tell me every day that they did not get their mammogram, or they didn't get their bone density, or they didn't get all these tests because they just can't afford it, when it's free. They're not even paying attention. Again, that goes back to understanding your healthcare coverage. That's the stuff that's free. That's the only benefit that we have really gotten over the years, is they made, you know, the Affordable Care Act made more preventative services. Now, they took away some of our preventative services when they made them free, right? So that, you know, they wanted to take away mammography, they wanted to take away a lot of those things, but nonetheless, they're still in place. And you have to take advantage of those, because I mean, breast cancer is real. Mammography saves lives. Bone density saves hip fractures. Checking your cholesterol, checking your blood sugar, checking your hemoglobin A1C for diabetes. These are things that you got to do.
Quick side note on the generic medications, your thoughts on that. If I go to fill a prescription and they offer me that, should I go with that?
Well, you know, I mean, certainly there are differences in the way generics act and whether or not people can tolerate them. Because I believe the law is, and again, I'm going off the top of my head here, but I think it's somewhere between 10 and 20% of the active ingredient has to be the same. And then the rest, there can be a 10 to 20% variation in the active, ingredients. So there's differences in generics than the regular branded medication. You got to be careful. If you can take the branded medication, you get it once and everything's going well, then I think that's a reasonable alternative. And it sure saves you a lot of money in today's pharmaceutical benefit.
And can you quickly tell us about HSA and the FSA accounts?
Well, the biggest thing here is that employers have offset people's deductibles with, you know, flexible spending accounts and healthcare savings accounts. And that's becoming a more popular venue. And the reason is because, you know, they're buying insurance, which is much cheaper if it has high deductibles. So it's less likely for people to use them. Then they're providing them a secondary source for healthcare funding using a flexible spending account or an HSA or a healthcare savings account. Now, these are things that you have to understand, and you really need to talk to your employer. You're not going to buy these things on your own. Typically, these are things that are going to be given to you by your employer. But those things can actually really take the bite out of your healthcare spend. In some cases, I've seen employers that have completely subsidized people's deductibles with those plans.
Very important to know your benefits and how they can work for you. Dr. Zaden, a wealth of information as always. We promise our listeners there won't be a test. When we come back, it's Ask the Doc. You're listening to The Healthy Woman Show here on WJR with Dr. Jonathan Zaden of Women's Excellence. Stay with us. Back here on The Healthy Woman Show with Dr. Jonathan Zaden alongside. And each month we have a special segment called Ask the Doc. And joining us is Jessica Roussette, the Patient Outreach Coordinator at Women's Excellence. Jessica, always glad to have you on board. What do you have in the mailbag this month?
Yeah, it's good to be here this month. And it's funny because in the beginning of the show, you mentioned that everyone's going to get something out of this show. And that's kind of what I did this month with the Ask the Doc questions. I wanted to find the questions that were really specific and actually had an age attached to them. So if someone's listening and they hear their age, you know, they can kind of resonate with what we're going to get into. So I'll just dive right in. Hopefully this isn't too hard.
I'll tell you now, this is becoming an office topic in when I see people in the office. And even on some of my virtual care visits now, people are, oh, I heard that. And I can't believe they asked you that on the internet. You sounded really nervous to answer it. I said, no, I'm not really nervous, but I get frustrated that they ask me these questions. So, you know, I mean, they're, you know, some of the toughest questions and I'm answering them on the air and I can only imagine my friends are listening to me going, oh my God, I can't believe you're saying this. All right, we'll see what you got.
All right. First one, what is hormone therapy and will it help relieve my hot flashes and night sweats? I just turned 48 and I feel like I'm sweating all the time. In caps, she is sweating all the time.
Okay, so here's the thing in that first, I want to thank whoever it is that gave us this question because this is not the embarrassing questions that I've had to answer in the past. So hormone replacement therapy or HRT, okay, as it stood, is the replacement of hormones to help you kind of maintain your metabolic balance. Now, there's a lot of different hormones in the body and we don't replace them all. But the big ones that we look for are estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, DHEA, and something called pregnenolone. Now, there's other hormones like cortisol and all those things that we look at and, you know, look to maybe do. And there's even people that are supplementing growth hormone. So if anybody's like listening to this, there's a lot of different things that are done. But those are the ones that I mentioned are really the top five. So when you look at what is hormone replacement therapy, it's replacing those hormones that you no longer produce or not produce to the same level after you reach the menopause or called perimenopausal state or that meaning or the menopause. Most people think that it's this thing that they're going to get and then it's going to be gone. Once you're menopausal, you're always menopausal. And the definition of menopause is the cessation of menses for greater than 12 months. So if you're no longer having a period for greater than 12 months and there's no other definable etiology, we call that menopause. Okay. Now, with a couple caveats, some people just don't, you know, they're not menopausal and they don't have periods. This is an older definition, but the truth is when you stop producing estrogen, you'll stop producing periods. And that's why they defined it that way. Okay. So what is hormone replacement therapy? It's the replacement of the hormones that you're already losing when you go through the menopause and you no longer produce and will get rid of hot flashes and night sweats in caps. The answer is, I would tell you that about 90% of the people that we manage with regular hormones or bioidentical hormones, we can get rid of their night sweats or, you know, and their hot flashes and those types of things, but not everyone.
All right. The next question we have, and we kind of touched on this a little bit earlier too, and this isn't the toughest question. So I'll preface with that. I am 34 years old with three young children. What kind of tests and exams can I be doing now to make sure I stay healthy for my family? Cancer freaks me out.
I think that's a great question. And the answer is we don't have a lot of screening tests for people in that age group, but a clinical exam really goes a long way there. And that's what we do. And we still want to see those people once a year. You know, I still recommend pap smears every year. There's a lot of guidelines that say pap smears should be done every 2 years. There's even some guidelines that say every 3 years. There's no mammography indicated at that age range. But I'll tell you, we do pick up a lot of subtle things that maybe aren't cancer or could be early signs of cancer that we wouldn't otherwise pick up. On just a normal, you know, history and physical. Like when people aren't ovulating, for example, we find those things. And sometimes we can pick up diabetes as a result of that or borderline hyperinsulinemias, things like those range. We pick up thyroid disease all the time by looking at menstrual irregularities and skin and whether or not they have symptoms of hypothyroidism. Sometimes we pick up hyperthyroidism, autoimmune diseases. And then obviously just by examining people, I've many, many times found ovarian masses just on clinical exam, which prompted an ultrasound. So if you don't get a history and physical, you're really not going to get any standardized testing, but the history and physical oftentimes will kind of parlay itself onto other tests that can ultimately, you know, find either cancers or other disease processes that could be, you know, just as bad as cancers long-term for you.
That was a great question. All right. So I'm going to skip to the hard one that I think is going to put you on the spot a little bit. And then we'll go to the last one after that. So this one is, I've had two children and I'm now postmenopausal. Will my vagina ever be the same? It's hard for me to orgasm. My vagina is very dry and everything looks different down there.
Well, okay. Now, I liked you for number one and two. So those callers, I really like them. For caller number three, I'm empathetic, sympathetic, but I'm a little embarrassed to answer it on the air, but we're going to try it. Okay. So here's the deal. So I'm a board certified gynecologist. So talking about the vagina is natural for me, even if it is on a radio station that broadcasts for, half of the Midwest. So on that note, we'll talk about the fact that will it ever look the same down there? Well, the answer is, I mean, obviously there's a couple of things that go towards the cosmesis of the vulva is what we really call is mostly the vulva or the vaginal vault. The outside and the lips of the vulva, you know, they change over time just with age, right? So they also change with estrogen content. So they're more full and they're more they have better ability to secrete glandular type secretions when they have more estrogen on board. Once you lose that estrogen, they kind of change. So they oftentimes lose some of their support and they also lose some of that skin, what we call skin turgor. So that didn't help that. Secondly, I mean, if you've, you know, had childbirth and there's been any damage there, that can be a major issue. So, you know, that's something that, you know, you have to, you know, pay attention to. I mean, you know, if it needs to be corrected, we can correct it surgically. There's ways to do that. And it's definitely tolerable. But, you know, I think that you number one thing is that you have to decide, is that something that's important to you enough to go through a surgery? I mean, you know, doing surgery is a significant, you know, issue. And it takes a while to recover in that area because you can't immobilize it. I can't cast the outside of the vulva or the vagina, right? Because you still have to have bowel movements. You still have to urinate. And, you know, I can't mobilize it because you sit and you move and walk and all those things. So it can be an uncomfortable heal. But once we heal it, we can make that area look very well with estrogen and also to do some minimally invasive surgery. The other items that you talk about are functional, like I don't feel sexual activity, I believe is what you said. Those are things that we can help too. We've got, things called the O-shot where we can inject things into the nerve areas of the vulvar region. And when we do that, we can increase the sensitivity for women and we can increase their orgasm potential. There's also medications that will help with the overall feeling of whether or not if they have a good libido or their desire for having intercourse, there's things that can do that. And once your desire is uplifted, sometimes the area will perform better, both glandularly and a difference in pain tolerance. So there's a lot of things that go on down there. I think the biggest thing, without going up into this in great detail, would be to get evaluated, because you need to find out, is there any damage that was done with childbirth, both to the vaginal wall or to the external vulva that can be corrected simply? Can we provide you any kind of estrogen type therapy that will help that area without providing you much risk to any other organ in your body, including the breast? And then is there decreased nerve sensitivity that we can do some things like pelvic floor exercises? We've talked about MCELA therapy on this show before, where we actually have a machine at Women's Excellence where you can sit on the machine and it will give you Kegel contractions, 11,200 contractions, right? Every 28 minutes. And you do it for 6 treatments and, you know, for, you know, 6, you know, basically a 3 hours of your time total on the chair and probably another, you know, 6 hours of travel. So in 10 hours, you can completely restore some of the muscles of your pelvic floor, which will ultimately help with orgasm and your overall sensitivity of intercourse. So I think the biggest thing is consultation. Get a consultation, evaluate, get a good history physical. Let's get a good, you know, good idea of where you're at, where you want to be, what your goals are, and then, you know, and then correct them. And if those goals are cosmesis and function, we'll go on those directions. If it's just function, if it's orgasm potential, we'll use the medicines and the, you know, the techniques appropriate to help you with those.
Great. And it's good to know that women have options. And, you know, you touched on MCELA and it kind of ties into the last question. What can I do now in my 20s to make sure my pelvic floor stays strong to avoid leakage when I'm older? I do not want to wear disposable underwear. Could someone in their 20s do MCELA too?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I'm starting to see this question a lot in the office. I wonder if this patient that wrote this was my patient, actually. I think the reason I'm seeing it is because so many women now have seen their moms undergo bladder suspension surgeries, mm-hmm. and so on and so forth. And, you know, in all seriousness, you know, not all bladder suspensions are the same from every provider. And so some people have, you know, have seen their moms, you know, undergo two or three of these. I see that a lot because I do a lot of redos of bladder suspensions. And when we redo them, you know, I oftentimes a daughter comes with them or whatever. And they're always like, man, I hope I don't have to go through that. So I think people are getting more aware. I think the biggest thing that you can do is pelvic floor exercises. If you do pelvic floor exercises and you do them appropriately, I think you can really decrease, you know, urinary incontinence in the future and for yourself. And also you can increase your ability to kind of, you know, stop urination because people get what we call urge incontinence. And if your pelvic floor is solid and strong, you can get the urge, but you can wait long enough to make it to the bathroom. Urge incontinence is when you get that urge, you got to go, you got to go, and you got to go right now to coin that commercial. You can't stop it. That's a real big problem for people. So I think pelvic floor exercise is probably the best thing. It's interesting that we touched base on that on the last question.
Jessica Roussette, patient outreach coordinator with Women's Excellence. Thank you so much. You got a great mailbag this week. We appreciate a lot of very varied questions.
Yeah, for sure.
When we come back, we're going to talk about the Endometrius Treatment Center of America. Stay with us here on the Healthy Woman Show. We're back in our final segment of the Healthy Woman Show here on WJR with Dr. Jonathan Zaden. And Dr. Zaden, we don't want to let the show go by without having just a few minutes to talk about the progress on the Endometriosis Treatment Center of America. If you are a woman or you know a woman who has endometriosis pain, this is something you're definitely going to want to listen to. Tell us about progress on the center.
I think we're making great progress. I mean, we have two sites that we've identified in the Metro Detroit area that we're familiar with at Women's Excellence that we're going to do as our pilot locations. One is in Birmingham and one is in Lake Orion. We've already made steps to get the physical space in our Lake Orion campus, and we're in the midst of revitalizing the space in our Birmingham campus to do this. I think it's extremely important. I spoke with one of my partners about this even today. And one of the things that we talked about is just that the surgeries that we're doing for endometriosis are so complex. The needs of the patients are so much different than the needs of a regular gynecologic patient who doesn't have endometriosis or some of the sequelae of endometriosis. And it's really important, I think, that the patients get, you know, that paramount care that they deserve when they have this disease process. In many cases, they've, you know, found me after they've gone to 2, 3, 4, 5 doctors. They've often tried many home remedies. They've tried all kinds of different things. We had done shows with some of the newscasters in the Metro Detroit area about it. And this is a place that you can go and get your pain controlled, and people will understand it. And separating that out from a general OBGYN office, I think is very important, not only for the benefit of our Women's Excellence patients, because now people aren't tied up with taking calls for these complex items, but for the endometriosis patients themselves, where they absolutely need the specialized answers and they want somebody who's knowledgeable about them, and they don't want to wait for, you know, one of our PAs or myself to, you know, call them back. They would like to get an answer relatively quickly. But, you know, in this environment where people are home, I mean, you know, a day seems like 4 days when you're at home waiting for a phone call, you know, and in the doctor's office, we're as busy as we've ever been because people are home more. And they're starting to focus on the fact that they're having more pain and discomfort and all these things. So, you know, I think this is just a great center to come on board. It's really a passion of mine, but I think it's really going to be great for Women's Excellence as well as it, as the center itself. And then for the people that are going to benefit the most are our patients that have these disease processes where, you know, they have a combination between endometriosis and vulvodynia and interstitial cystitis and IBS and all these different things, you know, together in some cases, and they need comprehensive care. And I think that's what Endometriosis Treatment Center of America is all about.
And of course, March is Endometriosis Awareness Month, so we'll be talking more about that next month. But can you just give a recap for our listeners as to what exactly endometriosis is and what type of symptoms it can be causing in women?
Well, endometriosis is when the lining inside the uterus grows outside into the pelvis, Marie. So if that lining is no longer inside, it doesn't grow up, stabilize out, shed, and then give a period. What happens is it's going in your abdomen and it's growing up, it's stabilizing out, and it's dying off in the abdomen because of the hormonal changes that you normally do during ovulation cycles. And what happens to that is your body sees that blood and that menstrual endometrial tissue as an inflammatory irritant, and it sends a bunch of inflammatory mediators. So people get cramping, pain, bloating, swelling, all these different things. And then when it gets worse and those inflammatory mediators, you know, really kick in, they can get scarring and they can get bowel obstructions and all kinds of different things from endometriosis. And in many cases, they almost avoid having intercourse because it's so painful for them. They can have painful bowel movements. They can have urinary frequency if it's, you know, impinging on the bladder or things are stuck together. So, I mean, there's just so many different symptoms that people can get from endometriosis. You know, most recently somebody told me that their back pain had gotten better. And I told them, you know, my famous story in the office was a lady that, you know, stood up. She had I was doing a recheck and looking at her incisions and they wanted me to check her for something down below. So she had just a sheet on. I walk in the room. She stands on the, you know, the doctor's bed has a little foot on it, you know, it was like 1 foot up that you stand on. And she stood on that foot and she's, you know, my height. Sheet dropped on the ground and she wants to give me this big hug, you know, and she says to me, this is why she wants to do this, is she says, my doctor told me I needed a laminectomy. I needed spinal disc fusion surgery or some rendition of that type of surgery. I'm not familiar with it that much. I don't do that type of surgery. And I would have been laid up for a year and all my back pain is gone. So you can get just about anything with these types of endometriosis type symptoms. It can be back pain, cramping, pain with intercourse, pain with bowel movements, you know, bloating, pressure, all of the above.
And with all those symptoms, of course, lots of confusion and lots of misdiagnoses. And that's really what you're trying to avoid at the Endometriosis Treatment Center of America.
Marie, a streamlined approach to evaluating women for symptoms that, you know, all kind of lead themselves to one direction. And today's, you know, usage of the internet really has helped that, because what happens is that people can identify their symptoms and then they're looking for a place to really treat them. This is the place that they need to be. It's constructed for them. It's designed for them. And really it's going to be the place that's going to get them better. And I, you know, I'm very, very proud of what we're doing to get it to that level. I'm proud of some of the different offerings that we're going to have, because, you know, many of these people are allergic, they have autoimmune items, stuff like that, things that we're going to be able to kind of foster and treat them a little bit more comprehensively. And I think that's the most important thing that's going on right now with the center.
And we're going to be talking a whole lot more about that next month here on the Healthy Woman Show. For more information about women's excellence and to listen to previous episodes of the Healthy Woman Show, please visit www.womensexcellence.com. Dr. Jonathan Zaden, thank you so much once again. A great informative show. We appreciate your time as always.
Thanks a lot, Marie. I'm glad that we got some great questions in today. The Ask the Doc segment was great. And I do believe that people will learn a lot about heart disease and, most importantly, you know, going in when they need to and then using their insurance benefits wisely.
Stay healthy, everyone. We'll see you again next month here on WJR for The Healthy Woman Show.
The Healthy Woman Show has been presented by Women's Excellence.